Ohio seniors make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.
Hello and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. Imagine you're at home one day and there's a knock on the door. You open the door to find several FBI agents standing on the other side. The officers ask you, "Do you know who BTK is?" And you say, "The murderer that's killing women in Wichita?" And they reply, "Your father has been arrested. He is BTK." That's exactly what happened to Carrie Rawson in 2005. What was a regular day at home turned into a nightmare for the family of Dennis Rader. This is the case of the bind, torture, kill murderer known as BTK. Let's get into it. Of all the horrible, disgusting, evil people I have learned about and who I research for this channel, there has always been something especially despicable about Dennis Rader to me. On top of the absolutely vile and horrific acts that he committed, I think it's because I know men like he was to everyone who knew him. I'm not saying I know men who did what he did, but I know men who act like him at times. They're joyless, robotic narcissists obsessed with power and control over other people, especially women and sometimes kids. They make good men look bad, and there's a lot of good men in the world. I have worked with these types. I have sat in one-on-one church meetings with them as they try to make me feel small and worthless. I have dealt with them as a teacher and as a paralegal. I have a particular dislike for this type of patriarchal, authoritarian personality. I was raised by good men who have a strong dislike of bad men, and I guess I inherited that from them. Today we are talking about a very, very bad man. Dennis Rader was born in 1945, and he lived a double life. He had an ordinary upbringing, but secretly tortured and killed animals and engaged in other perverse acts. We now see torturing animals as a hallmark of people that need help. He dropped out of college and then joined the Air Force in the 60s. He married his wife, Paula, in 1971, and then he went to work as an employee of ADT Security Services. Isn't that interesting? What a perfect way to stalk women, going into their homes to sell them security systems. Paula and Dennis had a daughter, Carrie, born in 1978, and a son, Brian, whose birth date is not public. Neither Paula or the kids had any idea that the man they called husband and father was one of the most evil and notorious serial killers to ever live. Later in life, he became a city compliance officer, which I'm sure he just loved because he got to wear a uniform and lord power over people. You know the types, just kind of the worst. January 15th, 1974. Part of the Otero family is home in Wichita, Kansas. At around 8:30 in the morning, Joseph Otero, age 9, unlocks the front door and steps outside. A man startles him by appearing from the side of the house. He points a gun at Joseph and orders him back inside. Josephine, age 11, was inside the home preparing to leave for school. Her parents, Joseph Sr., age 38, and her mother, Julie, age 33, were also home. The three older Otero children had already left for school, which turns out to be a real blessing. The man who broke in told them he was robbing them. Josephine began to cry. The family dog began to bark, and the man threatened to shoot it. So Joseph Sr. took the dog and put it outside. The man then ordered the four family members into a bedroom and he tied their hands behind their backs. He put plastic bags over the heads of Joseph and Joseph Jr., and then Julie and Josephine began pleading with him to spare them. The man put a rope around Julie's neck and strangled her until she passed out. He then did the same thing to little Josephine. He then took Josephine to the basement and did things to her that I'm glad I can't go into here, frankly. The man then went upstairs and killed Joseph Sr., Julie, and Joseph Jr. The man was Dennis Rader, and the serial killer known as BTK had just been born. 1974 to 1977. Three women are killed, Catherine Bright, Shirley Vian Relford, and Nancy Fox. They are bound, tortured, and killed. This becomes the MO for BTK, who always binds, tortures, and kills his victims. The killer actually picks this moniker himself. He tells them to call him that when he sends a letter to television station KAKE in 1978. In the letter, BTK takes responsibility for all seven murders and says that he is driven by what he calls Factor X, the same thing that he says drove Jack the Ripper, Son of Sam, and the Hillside Stranglers. He also writes, "How many do I have to kill before I get my name in the paper and some national attention?" This guy was desperate for someone to make him feel special and important. It would be really quite pathetic if he hadn't turned out to be so evil. Several letters follow containing dolls styled to look like his victims, crossword puzzles, and riddles. BTK is toying with police, and it is blatantly apparent that he's enjoying it. April 27, 1985, BTK strangles 53-year-old Maureen Hedge to death. He then took her body to the Christ Lutheran Church, where he was president of the church council. I said double life, right? There, he bound Maureen's body in various positions, photographing her in each position. He then wrapped her in black plastic sheeting that he had actually stored at the church in preparation for this murder, and he dumped her body in a remote ditch. In writings of his found later, he called this particular event Project Cookie. I mean, he's naming his kills. You know, he told the press what to call him. Just such an air of self-importance, and I find him vile. September 16th, 1986. Vicki Weggerly opened her door to a man claiming to be a telephone repairman. Vicki lets the man into her home. He goes to her telephone and pretends to check it for service. He then sets the phone receiver down and pulls out a handgun. He forces Vicki to the back bedroom where he ties her hands behind her back. She is screaming and fighting and she breaks the binding. So the two of them fight for a few seconds and then BTK put a nylon stocking around her neck and strangled her. He posed her, repositioning her to his liking and photographed her in different positions. He then finds Vicky's car keys and he steals her car. January 19th, 1991. Dolores Davis is at home when she hears a loud crashing noise. She comes running from her bedroom, thinking a car has driven into her home. Instead, she finds BTK standing in the middle of her house. He had thrown a brick through her back door. This is the middle of the day, and with the Otero family, it was 8:30 in the morning. This guy is very brazen. BTK tells Dolores that he is on the run from the police and he needs food and clothing. He tells her that if she cooperates, she won't get hurt. He handcuffs her and he begins going through the house. He pretends he's about to leave and then he removes Dolores' handcuffs, binds her with ties, and strangled her to death, again with a pair of pantyhose. He then puts her in the trunk of her own car. He realizes he has dropped a gun in her home, and now in a panic, he goes back inside to search for it. He found it laying by the broken window, and they went back to the car and drove to a bridge, and he dumped Dolores' body there. As quickly as he appeared, BTK then vanishes. Dolores Davis is his last victim. By 2004, the case is stone cold. Police admit they weren't even working on it anymore. There were no leads, people's memories had long since faded, and there was no way to solve the now 10 murders. March of 2004. The Wichita Eagle writes an article about whether or not BTK has died or gone to prison and opines about why the killer just suddenly vanished. In response to the article, the newspaper receives a letter signed by someone calling themselves Bill Thomas Killman. In the letter, the author claims he murdered Vicki Weggerly, and he includes photographs of the crime scene along with a photocopy of Vicki's driver's license, which had been stolen at the time of her murder. So at that point, they were pretty sure this letter is real. This is actually the killer that's sending this letter in. What BTK did not know is that police had quite a bit of biological evidence from Vicki's murder. She had BTK's skin under her fingernails, and police had gathered that skin. Police had actually done DNA testing in over 1,300 men at the time of that murder, but they never found a match. May of 2004. Another letter is delivered to television station KAKE in Wichita. In it is a story of sorts with chapters and headings for what the sender calls the BTK story. It also includes fake IDs and a word puzzle. BTK is playing a game and he wants the media and the police and the public to play along. June 9th, 2004. BTK sends a letter with directions to a package he has left taped to a stop sign. Police find it and open it. It contains graphic descriptions of the Otero family murders and a sketch labeled, "The Sexual Thrill Is My Bill." Again, a chapter list is included for what the sender calls the BTK story. I mean, he kind of did everything but name which actor he wanted to play him in the movie, right? Just, ew. Another package is sent in December of 2004, in which they find Nancy Fox's driver's license and a Barbie doll with a hood over its head and arms tied behind its back. Then in January of 2005, BTK sends a postcard to a TV station and tells them where to find packages he has left for them. The packages, which were inside of empty cereal boxes, contain more of the same: book ideas, puzzles, and photos. One of the packages left behind a Home Depot had actually been thrown away by an employee who didn't know what it was. Police had to go through the garbage, but they did find it. It's almost like BTK was angry that people had forgotten about him. He just couldn't stand not being the center of attention, and so he had chosen to kind of drum up some publicity for himself. In one of the packages sent by BTK, he asks police if he could communicate with them via a floppy disk or if the police would be able to trace that disk. The letter said, "Can you trace the disk? Be honest." And then it said, "If you can't trace the disk, put an ad in the local paper and I will send it." So the police responded by taking out an ad in the classified section of the local paper saying exactly what BTK told them to say. It said, "Rex, it will be okay." That's what they were instructed to do in the letter sent by BTK. A few weeks went by, and then a floppy disk was sent by BTK to a local television station. The only thing the disk had on it was a file that said, "This is a test." BTK thought he was so smart and so sly, but he obviously didn't know a whole bunch about computers. It's really difficult to actually fully delete all information off of any kind of computer media. You usually leave some kind of a trace, and he did. Police took the disk to their computer forensics team, and they soon found the IP address of the computer the disk had been used on. The floppy disk had been used at a local library and at Christ Lutheran Church. Now, again, remember, Dennis Rader was the president of the member council at that church. The computer forensics department also saw that the username of the person who logged on to record the disk at the church was Dennis. Police did a quick internet search, and they learned that Dennis Rader was the president of his church's congregation, like I said. Police also knew from surveillance footage that several of the BTK packages had been left by a man in a black Jeep Cherokee. Dennis Rader owned a black Jeep Cherokee. Police then quietly subpoenaed a pap smear sample taken from Dennis Rader's daughter, and they compared it to the DNA found under Vicki Wegerle's fingernails. They had a match. After 3 decades and 10 murders, police had him. BTK was Dennis Rader, and they wasted no time in getting to him. February 25th, 2005. Dennis Rader leaves his office to head home and have lunch with his wife. He is pulled over by a line of police cars trailing him and is taken into custody. He is booked and sent into an interview room where initially he denies everything. After learning about the DNA evidence and the disc traced back to his church, he then becomes angry with the police detective that the police lied to him about not being able to trace the disc. That's what he was mad about. He acted genuinely upset that the officers didn't want this game to go on and on forever. I mean, he must have been really delusional. Of course the police are trying to catch him. He then begins to talk, and once he started talking, they couldn't shut him up. He not only confessed to all 10 murders, but robotically gave graphic and horrific details of each crime. The following day, police announced from the steps of Wichita City Hall that they had caught BTK. The announcement drew applause from the crowd. Police then thoroughly search Dennis Rader's home. They find a glut of evidence along with very bizarre items, including photos of Dennis dressed up in women's clothing, lingerie, and clown-like makeup at times. I cannot show you most of those photos because of the way things are here, but Dennis Rader is tied up with his hands behind his back and duct tape over his mouth. In some of the photos, he appears to be hanging from a tree, and in others, he is lying in what looks to be a grave. I honestly don't even know how it's possible to get into these positions by yourself, especially when you're bound. He's totally tied up in some of them and dressed in women's underwear. When you know who made these photos, they become even more disturbing than they would be on their own. And they're pretty disturbing on their own. June 27th, 2005. Dennis Rader pleads guilty to the BTK killings, which caught prosecutors off guard. And then, on August 18th, 2005, Dennis Rader is sentenced to 10 consecutive life terms in prison. Kansas did not have the death penalty during the time the crimes were committed, so Dennis Rader could not be sentenced to death. In a 2-day sentencing hearing, Rader stands and delivers emotionless, expressionless detail on each and every single crime. He answers questions calmly and describes the horrible and disgusting things he did as if he's ordering lunch.
All right, Mr. Rader, I need to find out more information. On that particular day, the 15th day of January, 1974, can you tell me where you went to kill Mr. Joseph Otero?
I think it's 1834. Edgemore.
All right. Can you tell me approximately what time of day you went there?
Somewhere between 7 and 7:30.
This particular location, did you know these people?
No, that's, that was part of my, my what you call fantasy. These people were selected.
All right, so you...
Okay.
You were engaged in some kind of fantasy during this period of time?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, when you use the term fantasy, is this something you were doing for your personal pleasure?
Sexual fantasy, sir.
I see. So you went to this residence, and what occurred then?
Well, I did some thinking on what I was going to do to either Mrs. Otero or Josephine, and basically broke into the house, or didn't break into the house, but when they came out of the house, I came in and confronted the family, and then we went from there.
All right. Had you planned this beforehand?
To some degree, yes. After I got in the house, I lost control of it, but it was, you know, in the back of my mind, I had some ideas what I was going to do. I basically panicked that first day, so.
Beforehand, did you know who was there in the house?
I thought Mrs. Otero and the two kids, the two younger kids were in the house. I didn't realize Mr. Otero was going to be there.
All right. How did you get into the house?
I came through the back door, cut the phone lines, waited at the back door, had reservations about even going or just walking away, but pretty soon the door opened and I was in.
Catherine Bright, maliciously, willfully, deliberately, and with premeditation by strangulation and stabbing, inflicting injuries from which she did die on April 4th, 1974. Can you tell me what occurred on that day?
I don't know how to exactly say that. I had many, what I call them, projects. They were different people in the town that I followed, watched. Kathleen Bright was one of the next targets, I guess, as I would indicate.
How did you select her?
Just driving by one day, and I saw her go in the house with somebody else, and I thought that's a possibility. There was many, many places in the area. College Hill, they're all over Wichita. But anyway, it just was basically a selection process. Worked toward it. If it didn't work, I'd just move on to something else. But in the my kind of person, stalking and scrolling, you go through the trolling stage and then a stalking stage. She was in the stalking stage when this happened.
All right, so you identified Catherine Bright as a potential victim.
Yes, sir.
What did you do here in Sedgwick County then?
Pardon?
What did you do then here in Sedgwick County?
On this particular day,
yes.
I broke into the house and waited for her to come home.
How did you break into the house?
Through the back door on the east side.
All right, and you waited for her to come home. Where
yes,
did
sir.
You wait?
In the house there, probably close to the bedroom. I walked to the house and kind of figured out where I'd be if they came through.
All right. What happened then?
She and Kevin Bright came in. I wasn't expecting him to be there. And come find out, I guess they were related. That time I approached him and told him I was wanted in California, needed some car, basically the same thing that I told the Turtles, kind of ease them, make them feel better, and proceeded to, I think I had him tie her up first, and then I tied him up, or vice versa, I don't remember right now.
Dennis Rader, BTK, lives in solitary confinement at El Dorado Correctional Facility in Butler County, Kansas. He is allowed to leave his 8x12-foot cell for 1 hour per day, 5 days a week, for exercises and showers. He sometimes sends letters to media outlets like the Daily Mail, which include drawings and short poems. He is still desperate for attention. BTK will die in prison. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. I sure appreciate you guys being here. I appreciate you welcoming me into the true crime community. It's really meant a lot to me, and I want you to know that I think about it. I think about you guys when I'm writing and researching and on these long days where I'm filming, and you guys make it worth it. And I hope I'm bringing you the kind of content that you want. Feel free to comment and let me know if I'm not. If you haven't subscribed, I would sure appreciate it if you did. Stay safe and be kind to each other, and I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object. Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.